Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings. Gary Wellings.
And welcome to The Drift. Thank you for tuning in. Good to have you here on a beautiful Sunday, or Saturday afternoon. Joining me in studio, Reverend Horace Sheffield.
Welcome to be here. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And yes, your staff, Rick and Danielle, are here as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you and I managed to get together or talk on the phone, and since you've been running for the 13th district, I figured we'd start out with what is the 13th district, because sure. I believe a lot of people have a tendency to think that it's just part of Detroit.
Yeah. Well, it is the one district that has the largest population of Detroit in its district, there's the 14th district, by the way, which shares a portion of Detroit, but it's the northern portion, which abuts Oakland County. It has a lot of downriver communities: Ecorse, Garden City, Melvindale, Wayne, Inkster, Romulus, River Rouge, Westland, Dearborn Heights.
Yeah, and that includes the airport as well, is in your district.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's quite an interesting district.
Yeah, it's a very important district, and I think a lot of people really just kind of push it aside as Detroit, and it's not. And that's why one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was because people need to take that serious look.
Yes. And I think I'm really glad and pleased to represent potentially a district that is as diverse as that, because I even say in predominantly black areas of Detroit, being pro-African American, that Detroit nor this region is coming back on black. It's going to come back on green. And the degree to which we can, cities like Melvindale, which is on the brink of financial collapse, Inkster, which has gone through dire straits, can really cooperate on a broader basis than just our own local communities, then we can succeed in ways that we can on our own.
Right. Now, I spent 2 or 3 years working in Inkster with housing and urban development.
Okay.
Youth living centers back in the day.
Sure.
And worked with Floyd, I'm trying to remember Floyd's last name now, but it's escaping me. But anyways, he was head of housing, very good gentleman who took care of the people as best he could. And but you're right, those areas are in dire straits.
Yes.
They need some help.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that they need more than anything else are jobs.
Yeah, and I think for you to even succeed at bringing jobs, it has to be a focus. And one of the reasons that I'm running is because the current person who serves in this office is concerned about jazz, I mean, making jazz a national music, and things that really don't change the quality of life for folks on the level that I, traverse every single day. Now, there have been some mismanagement in some of these cities, but when you couple that with the current fiscal policies of the state, it's been worsened. And I know I serve in Washington, and I'm legislating and forming policy issues that affect the world and the nation, but at the end of the day, if I'm from the 13th district, I have to be more focused on the people that I actually represent and what they're going through, and finding, really constructive ways of being able to forge a better future for them.
Now, I don't want to be called an ageist, so I'm not the guy that's going to say John Connors is too old to be there.
No.
There was an interesting article in Cranes by Mary Kramer.
Yes.
Who went on to say that, part of your job as a congressman is to bring home that bacon.
Right.
To the district. And yes, that's part of it. I think nowadays, looking at what's happening to our country, I think it's way bigger than that.
Sure.
I think we need to look at a broader view.
And it's not as easy to bring the bacon with the way that Congress now does its work, so that you can't just attach, funding for specific projects to bills. I mean, those are earmarks, as have been dwindled down considerably. But you still have other entities that are applying for federal money that could use the support of the congressperson. So in many ways, that's absolutely true.
Right. Now, you were way more kind about the John Conyers ballot problem than I was. I think Drake and I hit it on the show 3 weeks back, And I was livid, frankly. And you were very kind about it, and I would not have been that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's what I found out. I found out that there are many people who respect the current congressman, but they also realize that he doesn't have the same capacity he once had. And what they don't want me to do is to trash him for me to win this seat.
Right.
However, that is one issue that I'm prepared to be blatantly truthful about. My campaign manager, Rick, is here. He's the one who filed the challenges. Here's what you need to know. Everyone around me wanted to challenge his petitions. There's been a problem with his petitions for years. 4 years ago when I was going to run and I pulled out, we did a deal. I helped him with his signatures. But I wasn't going to challenge him. But when the day before the deadline to challenge came around and we got a call from a reporter asking us about this debacle, and what I was told was that there were a few circulators who were not registered to vote who were brought in by the person who was paid $14,000 to circulate petitions, paying people 75 cents a signature, and brought them in to register them after, 2 weeks after the petitions were turned in, and then got someone to be complicitous with this cover-up to release a certificate saying that they had registered in December. That was a bit much. You know, he would have been on the ballot, uncontested, no problem. But when you do that, when you cheat and then involve other folks who are supposed to vouchsafe the process and make it integritous, but you taint it, you know, I was convinced and persuaded by the folks around me to allow Rick to go down and challenge the signatures.
And you should have. That was Rick. I think you should have. Anyone that gives you grief about that, shame on them, because you know what? He's been doing it for that long. We know that this has to happen every two years. You follow the process and you go through and it and get it done.
And if you engage with the Democratic clubs and the people who operate in your district, you know, Dingell mails out a petition to every precinct delegate, says, will you please fill these out for me and return them? But the other issue is what people don't know, that 8 out of the 11 folks that were challenged were not legitimately able to collect petitions. You had a few who had never registered to vote at all. And so this was a real debacle. What do I think? I think it indicates the degree to which most of what we see now is smoke and mirrors, that there is no real substance or ability to do anything other than to offer a reparations bill or to say this and say that, but to make things happen, it's just not there. And he's been woefully missing in every major battle. Right now, there's a person that I know of who actually committed suicide over this pension issue with the city, who is not only being asked but potentially to give up 5%, already pays taxes on a pension that they never had to in the past. As you know, a government imposed taxation on it, but then gets a notice, as many of the pension folks did prior to, it goes back, I guess, to Coleman Young's administration. If you retired by 1990 or whatever it is, they did what they call miscalculations of the formularies, which means in this case of the guy that I know, $56,000 he allegedly has been overpaid, which he has to now pay back over a period of time. And if his pension goes to his wife, she has to pay it back. So at the end of the day, when he added up what he would have to pay and what he'd have left, here's a guy going from $1,500 a month, which, by the way, also now has to be responsible for his medical insurance because they're giving them $150. The Skillman Foundation came in and weighed in with some additional money, but you had to be, I think, single and of a certain age or whatever. But the bottom line is when he got done, he'd get $500-$600 of his pension.
Yeah, which is going to be tough. It's going to be tough on a lot
of
people.
And so he said, I'm just leaving.
Yeah. Well, let me jump over then. Election here. You got a big campaign running. And I pulled up some information this morning, and it's looking to me as of the April quarterly report for John Conyers' campaign that cash on hand for him is only $112,000.
Right.
Not a lot of money.
No.
And I'm assuming, you know, what drives this for me is we saw what happened.
With Cantor?
With Cantor.
Yes.
And he got beat spending $5 million.
Yes.
This is a very, very good chance for you to win this election.
I think it's an excellent chance, and what I've done is without divulging all of my strategy. And it doesn't matter because we're doing this religiously. I've got great people around me. Ms. Edwards has trained 10,000 folks to become nonprofit managers. And so there's a history of us working with people on a level that unfortunately the Democratic Party proposes to represent but no longer connects with. You have the unions and other entities which have been very liberal and democratic, but are more concerned now about their own survival, you know, with them not being able to get dues, checkoffs coming, you know, within a year. They've tightened their belts and are wondering how they're going to survive themselves, so that you don't have this real bastion of organization that's being mobilized for any candidate.
Right.
And especially in an off-election year. So what does that mean? That means that there are people who are connected with the current congressmen who, based on myth or relationship or whatever, some of them don't even care if he's never done anything. We're just going with him. Some of them are doing it because they want to make certain I don't get it so that they can. But when we leave that crowd alone, you know, we get out of that crowd, we go down to the everyday working class person, older people. Everyone says it's time for a change. They say it. That's not our slogan. That's what we run up against everywhere. And the fact that we go out and we listen. Here's one of the things that's a marvel to me. I'm a preacher, so I love to talk, you know. but before I talk, I have to listen.
You do. Yeah.
And I have to hear what I'm being told to say. But what I'm hearing is so powerful that I've just stopped talking. And I listen. I go to senior buildings. I talk. Ms. Edwards, I probably talk for 2 or 3 minutes at the most because I really want to hear what people are saying. And people are concerned. In Detroit, they're worried about whether or not long-term generational residents are going to be displaced. Unprecedented accumulation of property by Dan Gilbert. Massive demolition of property. Wholesale neighborhoods being transformed into parks and ponds. And so when I go to these places, they're saying we are tired of people who come to us at election time and give us a good speech, but we can never connect with when we have issues that affect our life every day. And I listen to them, and they said, will you be that kind of person? Will you promise that if we call you? That we just left the Democratic Party meeting, and there's a woman that they try to silence who is a known person who has great connection with seniors, and all she wanted to ask the congressman is, if I call you, will you call me back?
Right. Well, that's the nice thing about you. I was able to get a hold of you very easy, and I'm not in your district.
Right.
You don't know me from Abel.
Right.
It was good of you to call, and I like that. I mean, our congressman, Tim Walberg, I can get hold of. He calls me back.
And it should be that way.
You know, it should be that way. Yeah. That's exactly right.
And you know
right.
what? Let me tell you something. And there are people in this room who would tell you that they think that I allow too much access, that I'm too open. But you know what? I grew up in the house with a man, my dad, who was a tremendous labor organizer, was a part of the Ruther Caucus when R.J. Thomas was with the UAW and brought the Ruther brothers into power. Vice President of Negro Labor, American Labor Council under A. Philip Randolph in the 40s, was one of the two staff persons with Baird Rustin that staffed the 43 March on Washington for fair employment practice and war jobs. And here was a man that was truly an icon. In fact, go read history books. He was the first person that Robert Milliner and all of them asked to run for mayor before they went to Coleman Young. But my dad just had a disdain for that. But I would watch my father stop at bus stops and pick up people. And people were just amazed. And my father always told me, he said, boy, it's all right for you to live better, but never think you're better. And never have a Wall Street mentality, because this is a blue-collar town.
Right. So I was going to get into this
later. I had to get that in there.
Yeah, I wanted to say, as a congressman, if you are elected, one of the issues that will probably come up, because I don't think anything will happen until after January, Keystone Pipeline.
Right.
Thousands of union jobs on the line here. Union people themselves are clamoring for it. And yet, Pelosi, Reid, Barack Obama, are putting the kibosh to the Keystone Pipeline. Where do you stand on that? If you become elected, will you stand with Pelosi or will you stand with the people who want to build the pipeline?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's the most important bifurcation that needs to be identified in this election. And again, I give great thought to everything. And for me, Nolan Finley asked me this Monday at the Detroit News, when you become elected as a Democrat, will you side solely with the Democratic Party? I said, I'm going to side with what is the best interest of the folks in my district, what's going to create genuine, sustainable, long-term, good-paying jobs for the American public. And so I'm not necessarily with the party line. I do have some environmental concerns representing the South Schaefer area where Marathon Oil has been a big polluter, and there's the highest rate of cancer and toxic exposure as anywhere in the nation. So I'm not juxtaposed to that pipeline. I think all of the caution and all of the assurances of safety, of the non-pollution of the communities, and what we can do to make certain that there's not going to be some kind of catastrophic occurrence simply because we sidestepped the necessary safety measures going in.
Yeah, now they've done the three studies, and even the latest CBO report, I think, said there's more risk from train derailments and truck traffic than there is from that line, and yet we're still seeing politics being played on this.
And the same with the bridge, by the way. I happen to be, a personal friend of Manny Maroon. Don't always agree with everything he does. But here's another situation where people who want the government bridge have no problem with it, but then claim that his bridge will pollute, and it's the same damn traffic.
Right. And you and I are on the same side here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know what government does. They don't do anything as well as the private sector.
Sure.
So this bridge that Snyder wants to go in is going to cost probably twice or three times more than what they say it will.
Right.
And the cost to run
And the Canadians are going to run it. There's no insurance or assurance of American jobs. And why are we doing something with a state that cannot even bail out the Inkster public schools or keep Melvindale afloat, who had to close a pool because they needed $35,000 of kids to have nothing to do? But we can build a bridge, but we can't create bubbles in a waiting pool.
Yeah, I'm one of those. I guess I'm a libertarian when it comes to that, because if it can be done by the private sector, you can oversight it as the government, but let them do it.
And it's gone through that process. Money. The EPA and all that have been involved have given the preliminary approval for the Ambassador Bridge Company's bridge.
Yeah.
And
the other thing that someone told me, and I think it's true, but I'm not sure. Maybe you can tell me, that the site of the new bridge is not built on bedrock like the site Matty Maroon wants.
No, there's all kinds of compromising done with respect to this, not to mention the least of which is that the neighborhood that is going to be destroyed is a poor black, poor white, marginal neighborhood. One of my good friends, Pastor Gary Woolrich, built a $2 million church down in Delray, First Baptist Southwest, and that church is going to have to be destroyed. When I went to those hearings, and with all due respect to certain people, I mean, you know, if you don't want toxic exposure, why would you want it for them? Let's be fair. I don't want your people to die, and I don't want you to kill mine. But I'm for private financing of that bill, and I'm going to see how the government's going to dance around this one. He claims no public money, but he keeps finding ways to get around it.
Yeah. So in a light, and this is what intrigued me to call you, was the fact that when I look at you, you are not the Pelosi-Reid Democrat.
No.
You remind me very much, from what I've read and what I've researched on you, of an old Jack Kennedy Democrat, which, frankly, for me, the Democratic Party died with John F. Kennedy, because the Democratic Party in Washington today is more socialistic than anything I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it strikes me that I would like to see an old Democrat, the original Democratic Party, come back there, because,
listen,
you know what, you've got some conservative values.
Richard Nixon, truth be told, in many of the political circles that I traverse in, was well admired in the African American community because, in many ways, he was almost like a Kennedy Democrat. When it came to black business, no one did more for them than Nixon did. But yeah, you know, I had great admiration, and I've got a picture in my pocket of my dad and President Kennedy. And I was sharing with some young people yesterday how in 63, for the 100th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, my dad was invited to Washington by President Kennedy. And one of the stops he made was Lyndon Johnson's house. And my sisters and I swam in his swimming pool as my dad met with the vice president. And, you know, when I came out of that meeting, my head was swollen, and I was telling my dad I was going to go back and brag. And my dad said, "Do you know how I got here?" I said, "Well, we drove." He said, no, do you know the reason that they're meeting with me?" I said, "No." He said, "Because I organized black workers to change the standard of living for working class people. And so don't think more of yourself because you're here. Just when you come, make sure you're not coming for yourself. Right. You're coming to represent some other folks who can't speak for themselves."
Well, let's look at your experience a little bit. There were a couple of things in your bio that kind of amazed me. You were an appointee of Mayor Ed Koch from New York.
Great guy who had the Republican Party and the Democratic Party endorsement when he ran for mayor.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. Is he still alive? I can't remember.
He just died, I think, last year. And I worked in the mayor's office of SRO Housing, the Upper West Side, where Columbia University was going through a major transition. And they had these single-room occupancy hotels where poor people were living. And the owners couldn't get them out through legal process, so they basically would fake fires and get them out and padlock the doors. The mayor put together this task force and created an ordinance that made it a criminal offense to illegally evict, and made those landlords have to transition those people into other housing. And it was he was a great guy. As you know, he always wore that boutonniere. And he also came to me when there was just an unbelievable number of people being killed by police officers, and all of them were deemed accidental. I think it was 56 the year, he said to me, and a guy named Otto Grant and Phil Frederick, who's from Detroit, "What can I do?" I said, "Well, maybe you ought to start by having a national search for an African-American to be head of your police department. It will at least send the message that you're concerned." And, of course, my brother-in-law at the time, Reggie Turner, was in Cleveland. He was one of the finalists. But he wound up tapping Ben Ward. And Ben Ward cleaned up all of the head shops, because back then in New York, you could walk anywhere in Brooklyn you want to, and there was no merchandise on the shelves. You stand in line, you buy a nickel of weed. And so that's the kind of thing Koch did. And, you know, he would walk up and down the streets of New York without any security.
Yeah, amazing. Isn't that absolutely amazing?
Yeah.
And today,
and just stop and talk to everyday people.
Yeah, that's amazing. You also worked for Dennis Archer.
Another great icon who brought into office with him the hope that Detroit could finally heal some of the division that existed, born out of the 67 civil disobedience and civil disturbance. Did a great job of putting some things in place. Great cooperation, as you know, from President Clinton. Just, I think, got disenchanted at the end, because no matter what he did, there were some people who still didn't think he was black enough.
Yeah. He spoke at my graduation in college.
Okay.
So, yeah, good guy. Well, we're going into heartbreak. When we come back, we will talk about some of the issues
coming
up.
Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
See you on the other side.
All right.
Always on the go, driving to work, running errands. How do they keep informed? They listen to Wham! Talk 1600, just like you. If you're a business owner, your message can reach these people wherever their travels take them. People tune to Wham! For the latest issues discussed by hosts Bill Bennett, Glenn Beck, and Theronex. They stay tuned in for state and local news with Dan Martin, and they'll stay tuned for your message as well. Call 734-971-1600 and advertise your business with Wham! Talk 1600.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jane Metzler. The spiritual leader of the Muslim Brotherhood sentenced to death along with 180 others for an attack on a police station that followed the ouster of Egypt's President Mohamed Morsi. The town of Rawa, northwest of Baghdad, the latest to fall into the hands of Sunni extremists. As for Baghdad itself,
there have been sporadic ambushes of military resupply routes going to these front lines. That's the first issue. And the second issue, and this is what's troubling people in the city, is that everybody here knows that ISIS has sleeper cells, that there are very large numbers of their operators have been based in Baghdad for many years.
Sam Kiley with Sky News. Secretary of State John Kerry now on his way to the Iraqi capital. Fox News, we report, you decide.
It's time now for Wham! Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake.
Child in a Strange Country, Helen Keller and the History of Education for People Who Are Blind or Visually Impaired is a new traveling exhibit from the Museum of the American Printing House for the Blind, exploring the human ingenuity expressed by generations of teachers and students. It'll be on display at the Ann Arbor District Library's Downtown Library, which is the location for the Washtenaw Library for the Blind and Physically Disabled. It'll be from Friday, May 2nd through Wednesday, June 25th. There'll be an opening reception for the public at the Downtown Library on Friday, May 2nd from 7 to 8 p.m. There'll also be related events throughout May and June at the Downtown Library. For more information on the exhibit or for related events, visit aadl.org/events or call 734-327-4555. Wigs for Kids provides custom-fit, age-appropriate wigs at no cost to Michigan children who are experiencing hair loss as a result of cancer treatment and other medical conditions. To learn more about how your contribution can make a difference in the life of a Michigan child, please call Wigs for Kids at 586-772-6656 or visit www.wigsforkids.org. That's Wigs, the number 4, kids.org. Habitat for Humanity of Huron Valley helps local low-income families obtain the dream of homeownership for themselves and their families. To learn more, call 734-677-1558 or visit www.h4h.org. That's H, the number 4, H.org.
You've been listening to the Wham! Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community at whamradio.com or write to Brandon Drake, COWAAM, 4230 Packard Road, Ann Arbor, 48108. Wham! Talk 1600.
If you have never been to the Rock Shop on Godfredson Road, get ready to be amazed. You will have tons of fun and save tons of money. Call 734-455-5560. Come and explore the Rock Shop on Godfredson Road. You can see beautiful displays featuring our many available products of brick pavers, retaining walls, slate patios, fountains, and rock siding, as well as fireplace and landscape kits. Statuary is now on sale, and you can save up to 50% off of in-stock products or order from one of our many fine manufacturers of garden art. We will instruct you on proper installation for every product we sell for free. Bring the kids to see our Rock Hound Room, a unique gift shop full of fossils, crystals, and gems. The Rock Shop is conveniently located just north of M14 at Exit 15. Call 734-455-5560. Or go to www.rock-shop.com.
You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
And welcome back. Thank you for tuning in to Catch My Drift. Let's take care of a little business real quick. The Rock Shop, for the best in outdoor improvements, call The Rock Shop on Godfredson Road, 734-455-5560. The Rock Shop specializes in retaining walls, patios, and has a great selection of natural and artificial stone products for walkways and yard decoration. Whether you need boulders or fireplace and landscaping kits, The Rock Shop on Godfredson Road is conveniently located just north of M14 at Exit 15. Rock Shop also carries landscape supplies and has a fabulous selection of statuary, bird baths, waterfalls, and fountains, as well as a unique gift shop. Call 734-455-5560 or go to www.rock-shop.com. Or you can go to Rock Shop on Facebook. Marco and Helena do a great job out there. If you just want to stop in while you're driving past, go see them and see what kind of stuff they got in the yard. 50% off statuary. There you go. I got that done quick.
You did a good job.
So joining me in studio, Reverend Horace Sheffield, district candidate of 13th district candidate for Congress, and running against John Conyers in the August 5th primary.
That's correct.
And let's give your website out.
www.betterwithsheffield.
betterwithsheffield.com.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
And you're also again on Facebook.
I've got several pages on Facebook. Just put Horace Sheffield. You'll get Sheffield for Congress or Sheffield page 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And we're on Twitter. We're tweeting. We're doing all of that. Yeah. Tweet.
We were discussing during the break the value of social media in campaigns, because our older generation likes the printed materials and the knocking on the door is what you're doing. But our younger generation loves the Facebook, the tweets, the emails.
The Instagrams.
And the Instagram. Yes. Are you doing Instagram,
too? We're on Instagram as well.
Oh, see, I
haven't
gone there
yet. In
fact,
I'm going to take a picture of Instagram this in a moment.
All right, so let's talk about some other, because you're going to be running. I'm a firm believer, and I have this good feeling, that you will run and you will win this primary. And, of course, your district is mostly Democratic, so you'll probably at that point win the general election as well. So,
but
for
I receive that. You're a man of faith.
I am a man of faith.
Well, good. I take that as a prophecy from the Lord.
Yeah, I have a feeling, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to reach out with you, because what little I can do in the world, I have a full-time job that's not political related.
Sure.
I also do the newspaper, and I do this radio show, and the reason I do both of those things, taking up time away from my family, is to help make my community a better place.
Right.
And I'm hoping that by reaching out to you as a conservative,
sure,
that in some small way I can affect you when you get to Washington.
Yeah.
And to be more open-minded and to reach across the aisle, because we hear about Republicans reaching across the aisle and other Republicans slam them for being too moderate or reaching across the aisle. And I'm hoping that if a Democrat reaches across the aisle to a Republican and says, hey, let's work on the things that we can agree on.
Sure.
You know,
and I think we can all agree that this economy is dismal. People in Iowa, Republicans in Utah, doesn't matter. At the end of the day, though, it's my responsibility to find a way, even as you and I are, to suggest that there's some mutual concern that we have. There's something there that both of us are concerned about. We may disagree on how to address it, but at least acknowledge the fact that it's a concern for us and that it's what we ought to be doing.
Right.
How we get it done, I don't have a monopoly on good ideas. And the good thing is I'm going to Congress at a time where I've learned to listen a little bit more. They don't think so, but be a little bit more open-minded.
Well, let's look at an issue
that
is big in the news this week. And I think it's an issue that not only from a national security standpoint, but from an economic standpoint, let's look at immigration.
Right
now we have hundreds of thousands of people, a lot of them young kids, pouring across the border. Now, they say young kids. I've seen the pictures. I've been doing my investigating. We're also getting gangbangers. We're getting kids that aren't really kids coming across the border.
And we're having folks being released that other countries like Cuba and Mexico would love to get rid of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what bothers me is, I hate to be the conspiracy theorist, our guy, a Marine, makes a wrong turn, ends up in Mexico, goes to jail. Caught by the federales immediately. So how did these young children and their moms make it from Honduras and Guatemala across the southern border of Mexico, all the way across Mexico, to walk or take a train or whatever way they're getting into our country? To me, it doesn't make sense.
Sure.
So it's hard for me not to believe that there's a bigger picture here and that there's a conspiracy of some sort, be it the drug cartels or the Mexican government or our own government trying to get these people in here. And what bothers me the most is, if we were to go ahead and have amnesty, they like to call it the big picture of comprehensive reform. Why would you do that, knowing that we've got black communities where we have 80% unemployment, where we have white communities with 80% unemployment, and Hispanic communities, some of them legal, some of them not legal? And I've talked to illegal immigrants who are here already. They're not any happier about this, because they will lose their jobs that they have illegally right now to the fresh immigrants who will come in and work cheaper.
Right.
So does it make – I don't understand why our government will not push for closing the border. Does that not seem like something simple
to
do?
It sounds like a reasonable thing, but two things about that. One is, let's keep in the discussion what our governor's doing to bring 50,000 – folks who can come up with $500,000, who have certain educational standards of achievement or levels of achievement to bring them into the state to take all these high-paying jobs that are going to be created through a variety of different things. And you see that on one hand, I guess, and we send mixed messages. And if it's wrong, and I'm not saying that it is, why do we have preference for certain folks in certain classes and not for others? The other problem that we have is a basic one, bringing your tired, huddled masses yearning to be free. I mean, we're a country of liberty, and we have put out there that this is what we do. This is how we are. This is a land of opportunity. And truly, there are people in the world who believe that. Now, I'm not for closing the border. I do believe, though, that we ought to, number one, take care of folks who are already here, children of illegal immigrants who need to be naturalized. They don't need to be illegal. Find some way for those who've been here living decent lives, orderly lives, legal lives, although they've been illegally here, to bring them into citizenship. But I also think, with respect to your concern, and it's a concern of mine, who are we letting in our country? What do we know about them? Are they people who are criminal? Are they being released from countries because they don't want to house them in jail anymore? Or these are folks who are going to come here and further wreck the tranquility of certain communities and bring our crime rates up higher? I don't know how we balance that, but I do think we have to be true to who we are as a country and saying we're a land of the free and a place where liberty rules and reigns, and allow some people to come here. I do believe that.
Yeah, I believe in legitimate, legal.
Right, immigration.
In the old days, yeah. People would come through and they would go to Ellis Island, which I'm sure was not the cleanest, happiest place to be.
Right.
But it was a process where you came in, you were screened for health.
Right.
You were screened to make sure you didn't have tuberculosis and other diseases. Then you came in and you went through the process.
Right.
Today, people are pouring across the Mexican border.
Yeah,
and
right.
That's the one reason I'm thinking to myself, if we were to physically...
Right.
Shut that border down.
Right. I am.
Then you can allow those people.
I'm against illegal immigration. I think we need to tighten our borders up. And I also think, with respect to, I don't believe we ought to cap or we ought to have preference for certain people who we let to come to our country. But I also think we ought to screen people. I don't believe that we should be receiving folks that Castro sends here who he knows would wreak havoc because they did so there.
Right.
And I think that that's just not what needs to happen. Let me tell you, I go to Nassau, Bahamas all the time. And I've been going there for 30 years. I preach there. I'm a part of a church there. And one of the worst things that happened there was when they allow Haitians and a certain other group of people, I forget, and their crime rates have just quadrupled. And the people who are indigenous to Nassau, and these are all people of color, the folks that they brought there are just as dark as they are, are appalled that their government has allowed these people to come there and literally change the culture of their nation, and allowing the wrong folk, a culturally criminal crowd to come here is the wrong thing to do. So
yeah,
we have some agreement on that.
Yeah, and that's what
that's
I look
not
at.
Hard to find out either.
Yeah, you see these people coming across, you don't know who they are if you're not running them through a process.
Yeah, but obviously the process will let you know that.
Yeah, and we have to have that. I guess my concern is if they can
take a picture of a butterfly on a flower from space, they can take some time to figure out whether or not we're letting people in our country who are going to further destroy the economic fiber and the tranquility of our communities. A little yeast leaven if the whole loaf.
Yeah.
So I'm not for just wide open borders. I believe it ought to be legal. I think it ought to be negotiated. And I think we ought to always, though, make certain that if we put out there that we're a nation that allows for the tired, huddled masses yearning to be free, to find liberty, that we stay true to that principle.
Yes, and that's the culture part.
And we don't discriminate, by the way, as Governor Snyder is, saying we want 50,000 wealthy folks, highly trained folks, to come to Michigan so that this new job growth that we're going to see through all that's happening in Detroit, in the region with the M1 and everything else, are absorbed by folks who just got here.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you.
Folks who've already been here can't get the job.
Yeah, Rick Snyder is not always, I'd say I'm probably 70% on board with him most issues, but that's one of the issues I'm not happy about either, because I do believe we have enough educated people or people who are capable of being educated to take those jobs as opposed to bringing in people from another part of the world.
And if they're not, then you're the governor. You're over the State Department of Education. The state sets the standards in court with Race for the Top, you know. Then you figure out how to get these people equipped.
Yes, get those people trained up and ready to go.
Right.
So for me, when I look at immigration, I always want to say the key word for me is comprehensive. Anytime I hear the federal government say comprehensive, I immediately put my hands up and go, oh, my gosh, you guys can't do anything right, and yet you want to take a big chunk. Same with Obamacare.
Right.
If they had done it in tiny steps, one step at a time where they could agree on things, you know, the one thing they never touched in Obamacare was the lawyers.
Yeah. But here's the basic problem that I have, and I want to get to the real crux of what I, you know, want to represent. And it's not a socialist approach. It's not a bleeding liberal approach. It's not a throwing money at the problem approach. It's being sensitive to the fact that if we don't do something about people who have done everything right but all wrong is now occurring in their lives, then the very fabric of this nation can be destroyed. We're talking about people who spent 28, 30 years on the job, who've lost their pensions, who are unemployed. You know, I have a basic theme is our money spending on us. We spend 1% of our total federal budget on foreign affairs. I want to propose what I call the Federal Domestic Relief Act, FDR, and that we spend another 1%, not encompassing or including money we already spend on workforce development and things of those nature, which are Head Start, which are of a domestic basis, and spend that money to really invest in the American economy and American people. Because even though Wall Street has made more money than ever before, and even the mortgage companies who engage in all kinds of illegal activity, false appraisals, you name it, homes foreclosed, and then they did short sales. I mean, they didn't lose anything. The American public lost its equity, lost their investments and everything else. So why can't we be focused on the American public? And I'm not talking about money that creates a disincentive for people to work. I'm talking about helping people who are truly struggling just to survive and in ways that enriches the American economy. Look at our roads. I mean, look right here in Michigan. We can't even get a legislature to agree on how to spend or what to spend. So my basic sub thing is our money spending on us. I saw a piece on 60 Minutes where ground commanders overseas were going around and rebuilding homes that were wrongfully destroyed or putting roofs on people's homes and currying favor with foreign families and foreign people. But yet when you land in Metropolitan Airport, you think you're in Nassau, so many blue tarps on people's roofs. I mean, let's help Stella get a groove back. Let's put a roof on some of these people's homes.
Right. Well, let's talk money for a second, because what we do have is a budget that is $1 trillion more than what we take in every year.
Right.
Where do you sit with a balanced budget?
Well, you know, by the way, Democrats have been able to achieve that. I mean, Bill Clinton left this country in great—
With Newt Gingrich.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's the kind of example of what you and I are talking about. I mean, there was a basic belief that there was need for fiscal integrity and that both parties had to meet somewhere in the middle. That's what we don't have now. We don't have that.
That's correct.
And I'm not for turning blind eye to some of the needs for the social things that need to happen. So I'm all for getting to a balanced budget, but I don't want to get to the balanced budget by, as in Michigan, you know, less money for schools, less money for cities who are supposed to get more money for revenue sharing. I'm not for that. I'm for, you know, reducing our military budgets. I'm for reducing things that people traditionally love to protect, but didn't want to cut on the social service or the human side. How do we get there? We need to have some real discussion with rational, sane, civil folks who are not protective of earmarks, protective of cash cows, and really make this country financially solid. By the way, even everyday people, I was at and Ms. Edwards was with me, I was at a senior home, and this guy was like the woman reaching for Jesus' garment. I mean, he just wouldn't let go with the trillions of dollars that this country is in debt and how that affects. This is a retired man, no, not an economics professor, but someone who's generally concerned about whether or not there's going to be a major fiscal collapse of this country. And I think we've got to come to grips with that. We really do. I don't have all the answers. I've got a master's in public administration, by the way. I know about CAFRs. I know skewed ketosis. But I guess I've got to delve deeper into the federal budget, understand more about some of the things that, you know, would happen. But I can assure you this, I'm not going to be just pro-Democratic Party. And let's be recalcitrant and put a wall up and not find some way to meet in the middle and get there together.
Right. So speaking of that, then, let me bounce an idea off you, because you are a charter school guy, right?
A charter school, and yeah. I actually pushed for the limits to come off with Clark Durant, my dear friend.
Okay, so you believe that we should have more charter schools? If
I believe that there ought to be more choice, that, you know, unfortunately, kids in poor communities are forced to go in Detroit, for example, to EAA, which is a district of failing schools.
Yeah.
What choice is that? You know, not so failing or completely failing.
Right. So let me run this past you. So when I look at our school system here in this country, I see a school with a principal and his staff. Then I see a school superintendent for that with the school board and their staff. And then I see the Michigan State superintendent and the board with their staff. And then I see the federal government Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at seven layers or so of mm-hmm. administration. Mm-hmm. Does it not make sense to say to Arne Duncan and the federal department, we're taking your money and we're going to give it to the states and let them deal with each of the states? Because if there's a bigger Hispanic population in Arizona, maybe they are a little bit different than a population here in Detroit. And math and history and that kind of stuff the same. But there could be some, and it could be as simple as industry. Maybe we're going to teach a little more Hollywood industry in California versus auto industry here. Does it make sense to push that down and just get rid of it because it's redundant?
Here's what you're saying, and I'll try to be as simple as possible. There's not enough money presently being spent on education. We're far behind other industrialized nations and other nations that soon seem to be poised to take over the world. But having said that, then you begin at every rung to reduce additional money that goes toward actual classroom instruction and local school management. The Detroit Public Schools, for example, is a great example because you have all these legacy costs. So if it's $25.47 per pupil, which is the FTE, which means, by the way, that child has to be present for every class for the count period, and that rarely happens. I've run a school, and you might get 75% of the kids if you're lucky. That you get a full FTE on. But then you've got to pay for security. You've got to pay for dwindling buildings. And so when you think about that, your idea makes more sense, because if you begin to consolidate and you don't have all of these additional layers of costs that siphoned off from actual education, you have more money that's available to actually educate that child.
Yeah, when I look at billions of dollars at the federal level that could be better spent here at the state or in the actual district level, and of course there's that district problem anyways, we have way more school districts in this state than we need.
Right.
I mean, that's insane that we have.
And there have been some, Inkster School District was closed. There was a bill that called for consolidation of districts under a certain number of students. The problem with that, by the way, and as I understand the need for it, I also want to make certain that there has to be, by structure, the inclusion of people whose tax money, though it comes from the state, is actually coming from their property and whatever that go into those districts. You know, we're a local control kind of country. And how do you make certain that people in Inkster, even though E-Course or some other district may now be responsible for three districts as opposed to one, are given adequate attention and equal standing with respect to their children? I think it can be done. See, I'm a person that believes that if you involve people on the front end and you come to them with a legitimate rationale, not some subverted, cloistered, clandestine, you know, ultimate enhancement of some person behind the dim unknown, and you can convince people that your honest integrity, this is going to lead to the betterment of their child. I think you can convince people. We just don't take the time to do it.
Yeah. Let's hit one more item
sure.
that you may have to deal with yep. come January.
Right.
Iraq.
Right.
300 guys just got sent back in.
Yeah.
These are advisors,
yeah.
allegedly.
Yeah.
That's the way Vietnam started.
Yeah.
What would you, where would you stand if Barack Obama had to begin committing more and more troops,
yeah.
more and more advisors, if you want to call them whatever? At what point would you say, I'm not on board?
Yeah.
With going back?
It's a great question, but let me just, in fairness to President Obama, indicate that that's an involvement and an engagement and a theater that he wasn't responsible for creating in the first place, and that there was false and faulty premise for us invading Iraq after 9/11. And to the president's credit, he did get Osama bin Laden. But I am diametrically opposed to sending any more folks back into Iraq. I understand Israel's interests. I understand the need for peace in the Middle East. But I also know that while we've been in pursuit of those things, we've actually caused the actual opposite to occur.
Yeah, we've built up
more animosity among people who see us representing liberation, but actually being engaged in subjugation.
Right.
And I just have a fundamental problem with that.
Had we left some troops in Iraq, and I understand Barack Obama ran and made promises to end the Iraq war, but did we pull out too quickly?
Part of his presidency.
Yeah, did we pull out too quickly?
I think the president was probably over-concerned about not being the read my lips, no new taxes kind of guy.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone has been since George Bush Sr. said that. But at the same time, I mean, I just got back from the Middle East in January. It's a very threatening place to see kids 11 and 12 having to run into bomb shelters.
Yeah.
We've got to find a way to forge real peace in the Middle East.
Well, let's go with betterwithsheffield.com
yes.
is your website.
Yep.
I encourage people to go to that website and check it out. Thank you, sir, for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed myself.
All right. Take care. Until next week, go to thedailydrift.com. Stay abreast of the information. Take care.